Please, you.
You need a white lady to give you a son with human blood.
I wouldn't know what to do.
Not with no white lady.
Don't kiss me yet. Unless it's just a cousin kiss.
Don't expect the genteel romance of Gone with the Wind. Expect to see men and women bred like cattle.
Mandingo! Pure bred Mandingo!
In Africa, my people born free. That's right. Free men, not slaves.
Ain't nobody, never, white or black, gonna take your place.
It's my story. You attacked me.
Master Hammond, I never craved to do anything against you.
Get in!
No, Master.
Expect Mandingo, the first true motion picture epic of the Old South. Rated R.
Hey, Chef.
And welcome once again to another episode of the Sweet Feathery Jesus Podcast. We're doing another movie club, and this time it's one that's pretty legendary and
near and dear to your heart.
And near and dear to my heart, definitely, in exploitation cinema. The 1975 classic Mandingo is on deck tonight, and it's a doozy. With me is Booze from the UK. Hey, Booze.
How you doing, all right?
And Dr. P, who's here in America like me.
Hey, folks.
This film was made in 1975, and it's set during the 1830s, I believe. And it's probably the movie that could set race relations back further than any other film in history. And I put this even ahead of Birth of a Nation.
Well, yeah. To be honest with you, if you'd have given this script to D.W. Griffiths just after he'd come off shooting Birth of a Nation, he would have probably said, you know what, we're going to have to tone this down a little bit.
It was tough.
Excuse me.
And, you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad movie. We watch generally really horrible movies.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, very uncomfortable, and you know, it's not slave and master sitting on the porch singing songs, you know. Mm-hmm. it's brutal.
One of the things that's always bugged me, the Academy Awards gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Dino De Laurentiis,
right,
who has an impressive body of work.
An incredibly impressive body of work as a producer. I mean, he produced...
Death Wish. Yeah, but King Kong, the mid-70s King Kong.
Evil Dead 2, which is something I love. Army of Darkness.
I like that a lot. Blue Velvet,
yes.
Yeah, I read all these.
The shit ones. Yeah. He did a lot of them as well.
He produced a lot of... really, really big budget
schlock.
But he also did some decent films too.
Serpico, that's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah, that's a good one.
He did Serpico and 3 Days of the Condor, which both movies I liked a lot.
But here's the thing: when they honored him at the Academy Awards not too long ago, and they played the little clip show of movies he's produced, no Mandingo, and I was looking for it.
Well, they had too much to choose from. It's hard, you know.
Yeah.
They probably said, right, we're going to go between Serpico, 3 Days of the Condor. We want to get Mandingo on there. And someone said, well, look, we haven't got enough time. Just can't squeeze it in. And
We watched Mandingo. And immediately, right off the bat, when you start the movie, which I thought was actually a stroke of genius. You get to listen to the classic blues sounds of Muddy Waters.
Oh, yeah.
Singing a song that was actually composed for that movie called Born in This Time, To Never Be Free.
It was quite
I love the song. I like it a lot.
They know my feeling is all I ever own.
Yeah, Muddy Waters is one of my favorite blues artists. And
can I just say, though, that I was kind of confused at the start of this film, because I thought Mandingo, I thought this was that Meryl Streep film. She was a baby in the outback. So I was lost.
Now, one thing I that really was heavy-handed in that movie was just how fucking horrifically the women were treated, too.
Well, no one escaped, you know, the wrath of the white man, really.
We should set the stage a little bit with some of the characters. We start off with Hammond Maxwell.
She a virgin?
Oh, well, I reckon, but you can't never be sure about a black wench.
Hammond Maxwell is the son of, I believe his name is Warren Maxwell. The guy, he owns a plantation in, I believe it's Alabama.
Yeah, kind of run-down plantation.
A run-down plantation, and he's, Hammond has a disability. Apparently he was kicked off of a pony when he was a kid, and had his knee stomped and shattered by the pony. Nah. So he walks with an extremely exaggerated limp.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like the guy who was doing the jazz tap in Justin to Kelly. I mean, I missed that bit. I don't know what happened. Maybe I fell asleep like for a micro nap at that point. But it was right at the start, I guess, when they mention it.
Yeah,
I didn't know why he was limping around, so that just kind of made it even more odd for me watching it. I thought it might have been like, you know, he turns up on the first day on set, and he does, they do the first scene, and he's just got this massively exaggerated limp, he's stomping around, striding around, and the director says, well, hang on, you know, what's all that about? He goes, no, that's the way I'm playing it, I've decided. And because it's such a big name, sarcasm now, they couldn't tell him no. That was it. Stuck with it for the rest of the film.
He's now the limp guy.
The owner of the plantation, Hammond's father, is played by James Mason.
It was a stretch for him, this accent, I believe.
Yes.
He's from Yorkshire, England.
Oh, yeah?
Even his posh accent is not his real accent, you know? His normal James Mason accent, that's an affected thing. Wow. Well, it was an affected thing. So to stretch to this, you know, Foghorn Leghorn type thing.
It really was a Foghorn Leghorn kind of thing. So,
you know, some of the acting was really strong in this film, and some of it was terrible. You usually don't see that in the same movie.
I missed that bit.
No, there were some really powerful scenes. Granted, there were a lot of over the top things that took you out of it constantly, but I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was a pretty good movie, and far and away, not our typical movie club fare.
No, it really isn't. It's just such a spectacle that, you know, and you're just like, whoa. Perry King played Hammond in the film. And one of those stronger performances, I thought, Richard Ward was Agamemnon. And Ellen His Slave was played by Brenda Sykes, who was...
She was really good. I mean, there were moments where, I was totally buying it.
But let's go back to the title of the movie, Mandingo. Which is a reference to the slave Mead, played by Ken Norton, who did a horrible job.
Yeah, he's awful, yeah.
Hammond, the younger son of Warren Maxwell, he's a little sensitive about his exaggerated limp, and he really has trouble
walking.
Not only walking, but dealing with white women that he's supposed to be courting or romancing.
Oh, right. See, this subtext.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the limp was about.
Right.
I just thought that it's just light black women, and that was it. Like Robert De Niro.
Right. He's extremely comfortable with satisfying the slave girls, and they establish it very early on that the massa gets to pleasure the slave woman first time out. Yeah. No questions. So
it's fair. I mean, he has bought her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is his property to do with as he chooses.
So he's a lot more comfortable. He's a lot more comfortable with the slave girls than he is the white women. And one of the girls that he's due to pleasure is Ellen, one of their slaves. And lo and behold, he starts to have feelings for Ellen.
Very strong feelings, I mean.
Yeah. Very, very strong feelings.
One might even say love.
Now you won't be wanting me no more. You'll be selling me or giving me to
one. Oh, Ellen, honey, now I ain't ever going to sell you. You're mine.
Now there's kind of a running side thread that Hammond's father, Warren Maxwell, has always wanted a good fighting slave.
You Mandingo wench. You don't let just any buck get to here.
Pure Mandingo. You got bucks, too?
I'd give $3,000 for a Mandingo buck. Need one, breed her.
They say in the movie, I mean, they say nigger throughout the entire film.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's no absence of
Wait
the word.
Wait a minute now.
Do you have any religion for your niggers, Mr. Maxwell?
Hell no. More religion they gets, the ornerier they gets. Harder to drive.
Don't worry none about their immortal souls.
They ain't got no immortal souls. They gets to thinking they has souls. They gets to thinking they's as good as white folk. Ma'am, you reckon you got a soul?
Lazy, no account, stupid, godforsaken nigger like me can't have a soul, my
I must have downloaded. I downloaded the dub for the TV 80s version. They don't say that word at all. They say coloured chap in this one.
There was all kinds of little things that I just was like, wow. The fact that the babies were referred to as suckers.
Suckers.
Yeah. See, I tried to Google that and see if there, you know, anything that would link it back to slave times. I couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought I'd misheard it. You know?
Yeah. No, it was suckers all the way through. It was this was based on a novel by Carl Onstott. Which, of course, I've never read the novel.
He was a big anti-slave guy. I'm sure.
Really?
Tried to make it look worse than it was.
Yeah, it comes through.
That was a total joke, guys. I can't believe the silence and then let's keep on.
James Mason has arthritis, as they call it, the rheumatism.
The rheumatiz.
The rheumatiz. And somebody suggests to him, is like,
one of them naked Mexican dogs. They say dreams the rheumatiz right out of the man into the dog.
Of course, they make the decision that, well, a slave is just as good as a dog.
Yes.
So they call over a little slave boy, and James Mason keeps his feet propped up on this kid throughout the entire
That's it. Every time, pretty much every time you see James Mason, he's got his feet up on a little black kid. You know, which is handy. I think he had that written into his contract before he even knew what it was. But that, you know, that's alternative medicine, and it's just as likely to work as homeopathy, I would say.
True.
And is it not true that, you know, you can cure AIDS by leaning on a Chinaman? I've heard that.
Has that been proven?
Well, you know, they haven't done extensive studies on it yet, but
yeah.
What's your place?
But, you know, the kids were really used as a lot of comic relief in this movie because, you know, there was the "you sure do look funny hanging there, kid." And also the kid that was being used as a footstool. Did you catch that moment when he was running through the house and he stopped and looked to see if James Mason was there? And he's like, oh, shoot, there he is. And as soon as he saw him there, he ducked behind the corner and then came out like holding his back. Oh, this rheumatism is getting...
I mean, it's a bit of his as well, at one point.
And trying to get away from being a footstool, and James Mason wasn't hearing it. Come here, boy, I still feel mine. Get down here. And he just puts his head on the floor and puts his feet on it. But that kid tried to con him. I love that kid for just giving it a shot, just trying.
Yeah, a bit of light relief amongst all the misery and horrific racism.
But it was always with the kids. The kids were always used as the comic relief. Consistently.
Well, there weren't much going around elsewhere.
No. A visitor comes to the Maxwell plantation by the name of Charles, who is apparently a cousin of Hammond Maxwell.
And by the way, he does walk in right on the slave beating and decides to take over. Here's
yes, he does. He does. Where, you know, the...
Real man.
Oh, man. Hammond had to walk away and let another slave do the beating, but Cousin Charles came in and said, "No, here, let me show you how you do this." Yeah. At which point it begins to just beat Mim unmercifully until Hammond comes rushing in there and saying, "You know, who are you to be laying your hands? You know, who are you to be
beating my slave?"
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, oh my God. So it turns out he's his cousin. And apparently, Cousin Charles from the other plantation, they're in a little bit of financial trouble, a little more so than the Maxwell plantation. So they decide to try to arrange a little hookup between Hammond and Charles's sister, Blanche. Now, wait a minute. You're thinking, isn't Charles a cousin? Yes, he is.
Oh, that's okay.
Which also means that Blanche is a cousin of Hammond. So,
well, you know, I mean, I know we're talking about the South here, and there's
shut up.
That reputation, but, you know, the royal family's just as bad, so how about it?
Yeah, so there's a little scheduled hookup, and Hammond is already, you know, awkward around women that he doesn't own. So... So he's a little intimidated at first, but eventually he gets Cousin Blanche to marry him, and they take their honeymoon off to New Orleans. The morning after their wedding night, Hammond seems a little distraught. What's wrong with Hammond?
What you thinking about?
I'm thinking. I'm wondering what man you had for me,
Hammond. Where'd you get that zany notion from?
You thinking I don't know a virgin when I sleeps with one and pleasures?
I was too a virgin.
You was once it, but not last night.
I think that was probably true because I saw her in Straw Dogs.
Was she the rape victim in that?
Yeah, it's Susan George.
Yeah. You're right. That was her.
Apart from Straw Dogs, she's more known in this country for, you know, being in Tales of the Unexpected. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hammer horror, you know.
Right.
And I think that's about her level. This was a bit of a stretch for her as well. And you can tell.
Yeah, she had a little trouble playing the hysterical woman, but...
Mm. Oh, we were talking about favorite rape scenes lately. Straw Dogs is up there.
Favorite rape scenes.
Were we talking about that?
Wasn't that nice?
I excused myself from that conversation.
Jesus.
We've discussed best rape scene of different years. Don't act like that. Anyway.
During the Oscar ceremony, I said, "Yeah, that's a hard one," and that's why they've left it out of the categories.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
pick a favorite.
Hammond is a little upset that Blanche is not a virgin. Well, you find out that Blanche is not a virgin, and it's because of her brother. Her and her brother had gotten it on back when she was 13.
Yeah. And again, royal family, you know.
Yeah.
Sure happens.
Brothers and sisters don't have sex, dude. You don't fuck your sister.
Well, you shouldn't.
No, you're right.
I mean, but there's no draw.
I'm an only child, and even I know that is wrong.
Well, you know? It's not even like an incest taboo or anything. You just...
I think it is.
You grow up with them. You just don't want to do it. I mean, it's like genetic, I almost think. It was so weird to realize she had fucked her brother.
Yeah, so... And Hammond wants to know who she'd had before him, but she won't tell him. So he's bitter about this throughout the entire rest of the movie. Now...
Since
they're in New Orleans on their honeymoon, Hammond decides to go to the market to pick up something new, and it's very interesting because he goes to the trading market and they're advertising where they sell slaves and mules. I noticed it because I was really surprised that they gave the slaves top billing there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and wicker.
And wicker. Slaves and mule and wicker.
And that's where Hammond picks up Mead, played by Ken Norton, short for Ganymede.
Ah.
And at booth 31, as a matter of fact.
So. Yeah, you remember past that old 80s TV. And Where in Time is Carmen Santiago. And bought Ken Norton.
So, yeah, after he gets into a bidding war with the most stereotypical German woman you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, how about that? Yeah.
Yeah, she was a piece of acting.
Right down to the accent. You're just like, this is terrible.
Brunhilde.
Yeah. Where she literally sticks her hands down Mead's loincloth to check the merchandise before she decides she's going to try to purchase.
Got a Mandingo! Pure bread Mandingo!
What I want to see? This is what I was looking for, yeah!
Good Lord, man!
I don't buy the pig in the poke!
You mean that white lady to pleasure with that nigga?
That's a German widder, and German ladies can never pleasure enough.
How much?
$3,500.
I give you $3,000.
I'll pay the price you're asking.
You're no gentleman trying to take the nigger from the poor widow woman.
The use you crave to make of him, ma'am, I ain't letting you get him.
$4,000.
I'll pay more. $500 more.
Weinhund!
And Mead commands such a high price because he is pure Mandingo. And apparently legend then was that Mandingos make the best fighters. So, and Hammond knows his dad has always wanted a fighting slave, so he purchases Mead at a pretty high cost. He outbids the German woman.
It was quite a lot of money. How much was it?
It was like $9,000. Hammond takes a trip to a whorehouse there in Louisiana because God knows he doesn't want anything to do with his corrupted wife.
Yeah, he totally just wouldn't fuck her because she wasn't a virgin.
And while there, Mead gets into a fight with one of the slaves that works at the whorehouse. And
well, it was, I guess you would call it black-on-black crime.
He just choked him out, I think.
Did you guys see when he tackles him how the whole grass rolls up?
I mean, it's totally
sliding out from under them when he tackles him.
I missed that.
I'm bejeweled on my phone at that point.
Rewatch. Well, I don't know if you want to rewatch.
No, I'm not going to rewatch none of this shit.
Oh, I'll rewatch it. I think I watch this movie once a year.
Next time you watch it, when they're in that first fight, watch for him tackling him and how the whole grass just wrinkles up like a rug. I guess they didn't notice it. I did.
Wait a minute. Can I just say, after that that fight, they arrange a fight in the future?
Yes, they do. They arrange a fight in the future with the guy that owns the whorehouse.
Yeah, because someone wants to buy Mead.
At a much higher price than he wants.
Yeah, and he says, I'll pay double what you paid for him. And Hammond won't sell. And then so they arrange a fight, right, you're going to fight my man.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you would think, all right, well, you know, Thursday or something? No. 2 or 3 months' time, he says. He specifies that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what? So you can show it on, you know, HBO. Why then?
Give him time to train? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Da-na-na.
Yep.
You know, what's all that about?
Which is great, because we got to see a training montage.
Yeah, you're toughening him up. Don't know about a training montage, more a bloke being put into a cauldron of boiling water.
Yeah. Brine, actually.
Right.
They put him into a cauldron of brine to toughen his skin.
And, you know, he's very willing to do it as well, because he's...
He's
not exactly the most militant of dudes.
No. It's Cicero that comes along and tries to and plants the seed in his head that...
You don't want me for the peck of wood. Peck of wood will kill me. Be like you kill me. You be putting that rope around my neck yourself. What you think you is, the hound dog? Peck of wood say, go fetch, you fetch. You see me hang, you gon' know. You gon' know you kill a black brother.
That's right, and then Ken Norton writes slave on his face, doesn't he, in little mascara.
Isn't that what Prince did?
Yeah, Prince did that. Because he didn't like his record contract with Warner Brothers. So, you know, Prince, watch this film and think on.
Exactly.
That's what I say.
So 2 months later, he goes and he actually fights in the ring with against Isaac Hayes.
Yeah.
He did look a bit Isaac Hayes-esque. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking either Isaac, or if you need a more current reference, Kimbo Slice.
Yeah,
very, very much so.
Yeah.
Kimbo, I'll have a slice of your thigh, please. Because it's not exactly Marquess of Queensbury rules, this one.
No, that's
he's
like...
He's safe, but they're all around the barn, you know, flying
he
about.
He tries to put his eyeball out, and it is the dirtiest fight
ever.
They
weren't exactly, worried about what kind of white gloves they were wearing.
Right.
It was just a bare-knuckle brawl, and Meade almost got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Right up until he saw Hammond say, "Look, I give up. I give up the fight."
Yeah, and then Slice eased off the gas a bit, and then Norton, basically bit his throat out.
Yeah.
Some would say that's cheating. The copy that I watched, the 80s dub for TV, a color chat version, they definitely cut a bit out there. And I'm sure that they wanted to show more of his throat being cut out. Because it cuts away to a woman screaming and then goes back and there's a little bit of blood. And according to Ebert's review, this was like a, I don't know what the ratings would have been over there, but school kids can go and watch this film. No problem.
Well, it was rated R, but it was something about where they showed that matinee or whatever, if they were accompanied by adults, kids could go. But it was rated R.
Hmm.
Because there's a lot, not just the racism that's objectionable, but massive amounts of tits. And
yes.
Hammond's knob makes an appearance at one point.
Yes, it does. It's one of those few movies where you get full frontal male nudity as well.
I didn't see that.
Frontal knobbery.
Yeah, when he was first going to deflower Ellen, he just walks across the room. There it is.
He's got his winkle out.
Yeah.
Got to admit, out of all the films we've watched for this, I found this the hardest to get through. Mainly out of boredom. Once you've got over the initial, Jesus Christ, what is that? What, 1975? Seriously?
Yeah.
After that, it was mainly because of the way it was made, apart from the racism. The whole thing seemed, because of the music as well, the incidental music was all very much like a gym. It was like watching a feature-length episode of Little House on the Prairie, a really racist one.
I would like that.
We have to, you're right, we do have to comment on the music.
Yeah, a bit of harpsichord, some banjo, and some voodoo drums behind it, to hammer on the punch.
The out-of-tune harpsichord was, you were just like, man, there's absolutely nothing that expresses the complete and utter insanity of the scene more than that. It's perfect. Did you notice some of the melodies that were used on it? I also noticed Hark the Herald.
Very much
so. Yeah.
All the time. And it was a bit like the sacred and the profane.
Meade wins his fight. He comes home. Comes back home the victor. Hammond has to go away. He decided he was going to work things out with Blanche. He was going to get his own house. And in order to do that, he had to sell some of the slaves.
Get groin surgery as well.
Yeah. Blanche gets it in her head that she is going to... she's just going to be a complete and total bitch.
Cunt. Yeah.
And so she brings Meade up to her room.
Makes him an offer he can't refuse.
Literally.
Did she beat the slave first?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Because Hammond seems to love Ellen so much, the slave Ellen. Ellen is actually pregnant with Hammond's child, which infuriates Blanche, and Blanche beats Ellen to the point that Ellen runs screaming out of the room, falls down the stairs.
Throws herself down a flight of stairs.
And loses the kid.
Pig! Filthy! Dirty! Dirty, dirty pig! You hear me? You're a pig! A whore! A goddamn whore! A pig! A
But, I mean, no one ever dove down a flight of stairs like Ellen did.
Man, she Evel Knievel'd that thing.
It was like she was going, how can I get to the bottom of these stairs the fastest? If be damned what happens to me. I'm going to, yeah, and just fucking did a diver. Did a header straight down, and
her
belly bounced on everyone, and they really hammered home the fact that she's going to lose the kid too. It's her belly hitting every fucking step the way down.
After doing that, she summons Meade to her room, and as you said, Booze makes him an offer he can't refuse.
Because I'm going to tell you a story. One day, I was walking alone in the woods by myself. And then, you came up to me. You were sweet like, real sweet like. All of a sudden, you attack me.
Basically blackmails him into fucking.
But he surely could have gone, yeah, well, miss, I've got a really bad leg right now from when Kimball starts to cut a big chunk out of it.
No, instead he just looked at her and said,
Miss Blanche.
That's it. He knows what he's got to do.
He knows what he's got to do, so he's blackmailed into doing it. And so he does.
Because no one wants reprieve.
Yeah, and apparently she makes him do it several more times before Hammond returns. And not too long after he returns, come to find out that, well, she's with child.
He couldn't be happier.
Oh, yeah, Hammond couldn't be happier.
Even though has he knocked her by this point?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, remember, they were trying to make up
right
before he left. So there's a chance, and she was banking on this, there is a chance that the baby will be white.
He may have said to her, you know what, we're trying for a baby, and a bit like putting your feet up on a black boy helps with rheumatism. You know what helps have a baby? Give a black woman as some kind of birth control prophylactic.
So anyway, Blanche is pregnant, and she's hoping that the kid is white. And comes time to give birth.
Is she? Because she's that sort of woman.
Yeah.
She's a complete fucking lunatic, yeah.
She really is nuts. And so it's time for the birth, and she's giving birth, and she's hoping, and she gives birth, and then she doesn't get to see the baby after she gives birth, and everybody's looking at each other, and
yeah,
obviously, you know,
whisked the baby away.
Yes,
yeah,
whisked it away, and you just hear Blanche on the bed just yelling.
No. Oh, no.
It's all right.
Please. All right. Lucretia, please say you're not black. Please say you're not black. Please.
As it turns out, well, it's not white.
It's the blackest baby. Full black babies aren't usually that dark. I mean, they got a black baby.
You really could. I don't know where they found this kid in casting, but it really did look like it could be Ken Norton's kid.
Oh, yeah.
It really did.
12. You know, it's the way that just kind of out of a clacker.
And so everybody is looking at each other. What do we do? And the doctor on call there says, well, just cut cord and let it bleed out.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I mean, why did they do that rather than just smothering the kid? Because every time...
Well, because that would be inhumane.
Every time I've been having a baby with a white woman, it's turned out to be black. We just smothered it, and then, you know, that seems to be the easiest way to deal with the problem.
And I didn't understand cut the cord. If you cut the umbilical cord of a baby, it'll just, the baby will bleed out.
Well, you gotta clamp it off. That's why they always put a clamp on it. They just cut the cord and then didn't clamp it. Blanche is in hysterics, and they come downstairs and they try to break it to the Maxwell family, Hammond and his dad there, that, well, the baby just didn't make it. Well, Hammond is so upset, he has to go running upstairs and see it.
Yeah, the doctor wasn't too vociferous there trying to prevent him from doing so.
No, he wasn't.
Doctor just went, all right, okay.
He might as well have just come down there and said, it didn't make it, but it's not totally black.
Guess what, guys? It's a color chap. Yeah.
And of course, so that means that, well, something has to be done about Mead.
Yeah. Now, this is the bit. Now, he doesn't really like his wife anyway.
No, he hates her.
His slave cost him $9,000.
Yeah.
He could have sold it for $18,000. But he didn't do that.
No.
His plantation's on its arse.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't he weigh up and go, you know what? Let's just get rid of her and then we can all carry on and go forward. You know, logically that makes sense.
She would have been the one to rid himself of over me, that's for sure. She was an evil woman and a pain in the ass.
he goes down to the doctor, doesn't he? And now this is where, I mean, I can't even get a fucking Xanax in this country now. There's no way I'll get any good kind of prescription drugs. But back in those days, apparently you go to your doctor, you go, look, my wife's been right out of order with this black fella. Have you got any poison on your cart? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, right, go and get it then. The one we used to kill off the old slaves.
Yeah.
Don't get that. Too old to work.
Doctor, don't go like, what do you want that for then? You know, it's just, yeah, all right then. I'll be back in a minute. And he does the dirty deed.
He puts it in Blanche's drink and gives it to her.
She drinks it
readily, too.
Oh, yeah. She just had a kid. She's thirsty.
Yeah, she probably thinks, well, there's no way he can get any poison unless he convinces the doctor to give him some. And there's no way. The Hippocratic Oath and all that.
Oh, of course.
But no. So she's dead.
There's also Mead to deal with. So he looks at Mead and he tells him, go bring a big kettle to a boil.
I wonder what's going to happen now.
Big kettle to a boil. You remember when we talked about in the training montage about how they basically broiled him in brine to toughen up his skin?
Mm.
Yeah, it's the same kettle.
What did he have that big of a kettle for, is what I was asking. What
I'll bet in
possible
a lot of,
need?
I bet in a lot of cases it was done for laundry.
Yeah, that would make sense. There's no way you cook anything.
Hammond tells Mead to bring it up to a boil.
Yeah, and they do. Big time. There's a massive fire going underneath it, licking up round the sides, and the water's all boiling up. And he tells them to get in there.
And Mead, finally feeling the influence of Cicero from earlier in the movie before he was lynched.
No, massa.
I don't think it's the influence of Cicero, though.
You don't think so?
Well, this is the point where you would think that Mead would rise up and, you know, go, I ain't getting there, and, you know, you're oppressing me, and I'm a man, not an animal, and, you know, make a speech, right? Like
right.
The dude got lynched. But you don't really do that.
No, because it's Ken Norton and he can't act.
Right, yeah. But also the script doesn't require him to, so he just basically looks at it, goes, well, you know what, it's boiling, so that probably hurt a bit. So I ain't gonna do it. But he still calls him master and says that he's always respected him as well.
Well, he tries to convince him, you don't understand the full story. I had no choice.
Mm. Mm.
He's trying to get that across to him. He tells him, you don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Well, but apparently he knows enough
that happened. Yeah, his damn wife has the blackest baby I've ever seen. I've never seen a black woman have a black baby.
Yeah.
Of course, you do get Meade's really, really emotionally charged, the really one line that they really gave him to sell, and I'm not sure he did it. He's like,
I didn't think you was somehow better than a white man. But you is just white.
Oh, there you go. Yes, it cuts both ways. No, but obviously, I guess the subtext, if there's any here, and I suppose there is that Hammond has felt his own failure, and he knows that his wife has done the dirty on him, and,
yep,
you know, he knows exactly what's gone on.
Yep.
So he's taking it all out on his $18,000 slave.
Yep.
Yep.
So Meade refuses to get in there, so Hammond picks up a gun.
So did you know the telescopic sight and the red light box as well?
And then Gecko 45 jumped out. No, in all seriousness, I was stunned when he shot him a second time with that gun. Mm. It looked like a musket or something. I don't know. I almost wanted to go back and look closer.
I mean, it did go musket.
Hammond shoots Meade to the point where Meade is actually blown back into the kettle.
That was the second shot. He shot him in the side the first time.
Yeah, he got him in the side one time, or at least the shoulder.
If he didn't do that, he would have had to get about 14 people to lift him up and chuck him in there. So that's well lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
way he just blew him right into the kettle, too, was a bit much.
It was completely Hollywood. I mean, it was totally a Hollywood setup. Now,
then grabs a pitchfork. It's not enough I just shot him into a kettle of boiling water. I'm going to grab a pitchfork
and stir it up.
Push him under.
Have to say the water.
Yeah.
That's the best result.
Slicing carrots like Bugs Bunny, yeah.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I read that in the original book, what he does is he actually makes a soup. And I'm not joking. He makes
pours
a soup.
Pours it over the grave.
Pours it over the grave of the dead wife.
Yeah.
Which, that would have been an awesome ending. But we didn't
Much better one.
It would have been good. I mean, what would he have put in there? What kind of soup do you make for a wife's grave? Some kind of thick broth or... I don't know.
Think so.
Do you want to...
It's got to be.
It's going to be a broth with Mandingo cooking in it.
I guess so. There's no way to get away from that. But there was a lot of water in there.
Mm-hmm. Mandingo soup. Oh,
watery soup.
No soup for you.
No soup. So he's pitchforking Meade while Meade is boiling, I guess, somewhat alive in the water.
It took him a long time to die. Yeah.
It really did. So he's being pitchforked.
He's a big bloke.
Yeah. He's being pitchforked.
Yeah, and then Steve Martin's dad steps.
Right. Agamemnon decides. Now, I do think Agamemnon was influenced by Cicero here.
Oh, totally.
Totally influenced.
It's spreading like wildfire.
And he picks up the gun that Hammond drops when he went to pick up the pitchfork and decides that, well, you know what? I've had enough of this. He blows away Hammond.
Well, now wait. He points it at Hammond and tells him to stop as Hammond then approaches him with the pitchfork.
Right.
Yeah. So you have obviously a semi-automatic rifle against a pitchfork.
Right.
And he kept closing in on him with the pitchfork. I'm like, you fool. He's got a gun pointed at you that obviously has unlimited ammunition. So why in God's name would you walk toward him armed with a pitchfork? But he does.
At this point, James Mason has heard all the commotion. He's like, you know, he's sat there with his feet up on a black kid. Up hills going on out there. What's up? You know, he's walked out and he's seen all this going on. So Steve Martin's dad shoots him.
Yeah, he turns the gun. Well, he yells, what was the last thing?
He said, I said, boy.
Put it down, man.
No, master. No. No, master.
You crazy nigger! Drop that gun, you loony black bastard!
bastard!
He turns the gun from Hammond, who's approaching him with a pitchfork, and shoots the unarmed asshole. So.
Ah, that's right. That's right. He did.
And cured his rheumatism.
His rheumatism. Kid never has to be a footstool again.
That's right.
And at that point, you know, you've got Meade dead. You've got Warren Maxwell dead, Hammond's father. You've got Cousin Blanche dead. And, of course, what better way to end it than with a little more Muddy Waters?
Well, yeah, that's the only good piece of music in the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like whenever Hammond was with, you know, Ellen, who he actually cared about and was actually in love with, you got to hear Zamfir master the pan flute. But whenever he was arguing with Blanche, it was the out-of-tune harpsichord again.
I didn't hate it. I really didn't.
I did hate it. I'm not...
To admit, far and away, the best movie club.
No, I really don't.
You still say Justin DeCalle.
Well, no. I mean, there's different criteria you could use. I mean, the one I've enjoyed watching most was probably Why Did I Get Married To? Because it was so... I mean, that even beats this for ridiculousness. And I would say racism.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a tough call.
Justin DeCalle did exactly what it said on the tin. You knew it. You knew what you're getting, and I think it was executed about as well as it could be. This film bored the shit out of me for massive long pieces of it. You know.
See, I found it such a spectacle.
It drug on. I mean, I'll grant you that, but
that's the Little House on the Prairie-ness of it.
Yeah, but maybe I'm just thinking of it in terms of my stepdad having to sit there and watch it with an entire football team. I did drive back to campus after it was over. I'm just trying to think of how uncomfortable. Could it be any more uncomfortable?
I still don't get over how they didn't leave. How do you stay through all 2 hours and 8 minutes of that fucking spectacle?
Because you're waiting for the payoff where Ken Norton goes mental and kills the limb, right? But it don't happen.
No, it never
even if
happens.
It did happen, that I think you take the team away. I think you go, we've picked the wrong film, fellas.
Yeah.
Let's start over. 1975, let's see what was playing.
Jaws had to be on somewhere.
Anything was a better choice.
The Exorcist, anything would have been better.
So, Pete, let me ask you this. Do you think this is the best film we've watched so far?
Yes, hands down.
Really?
By a margin, yeah.
Man, I couldn't disagree more with that.
You really hated From Justin to Kelly, didn't you?
Oh, I despised it. It angered me.
I know, but there was more. Oh, I don't know. I found that easier to watch because I was just like watching that with mouth agape. This was like it's the equivalent of, I think, of like a, you know, one of those films where there's one joke, like Big Mama's House, you know, what have they done? Three of those, and it's basically one joke.
Yeah, exactly.
And God forbid we should ever have to watch any of them for this podcast. This is like a one joke film for me in that it's so ridiculously racist, but you kind of become used to that very early on, pretty much at the time where the dude is looking up at that fella's bum. You know,
that was no more than 2 minutes into the movie.
And I'm sure
it was less than five. I know that.
I'm sure that's factually correct as well.
Oh yeah,
I guess you would check.
I mean, I just bring up the fact that he's, you know, he stares up he's looking up another man's ass to check for hemorrhoids, just because it was the most shocking. But I mean, they went full bore on it. I mean, you got to see a very intimate portrait of or portrayal of examining the teeth. You're just like, it was, you're just like, Jesus, come on.
Just pulling their mouths open by their lower teeth and staring in. They were just such asses about it, too.
Yeah.
You just have your own saying, though. You never look a gift colored chap in the
It wasn't a terrible movie. I mean,
I think it was. I think it was a terrible movie in every single facet of it. I mean, there's so-called proper actors in it, but the whole thing is handled so cack-handedly.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I love it, but I can't say that it's good, but I can tell you.
We need
100% to that I love it.
I'll never watch it again.
No, I'll never watch it again, and I wish I hadn't watched it once. But that's all you need to add to that. You love it as a, you know, so bad it's good type movie.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is for me.
Who can watch, you know, those types of films? I can't watch them.
It is one of those that I consider just pure spectacle.
But I know their pain. I mean, I've seen Braveheart and The Patriot. So that was the kind of my, as an Englishman, they were my Mandinga.
Yeah.
Braveheart and The Patriot.
Especially The Patriot. That's the most racist film I've ever seen.
Yeah, they really shat all over the Brits in that one, didn't they?
Come on, it's terrible stuff. Yeah, of course you've got the whole, you know, the porn trope. The Mandingo.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, when I tried to download this.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, dude. Everything was Mandingo versus Asian ass. And Mandingo versus. It was like, what the fuck?
There is that a many porn star.
Movies, that many porn movies are spawned from this.
What kind of results do you think I got when I was trying to research that sucker?
Oh, that's not good.
Mandingo. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yes, there is a Mandingo. Is a, according to Wikipedia, Mandingo is also an African American pornographic actor.
Yeah,
it's but, one person.
Yes,
he set the African American porn industry back exactly 11 months.
So he chose to name himself.
Yes, he
Mandingo.
Did.
Mandingo. I'm going to go by that stage name.
And interestingly enough, he was born in 1975, the year Mandingo was released.
Well, then he should have. It was meant to be.
Okay. He's won several AVN awards, including one, he's been nominated for several AVN awards, including one for best anal scene in the movie Weapons of Ass Destruction 4.
That is the best of the Weapons of Ass Destruction series, though.
Four is probably the strongest, yeah.
But I love the fact he's probably never seen Mandingo because Mandingo is not, well, his name ain't Mandingo for starters, but Ken Norton is not the strongest of role models.
No.
No.
Dude.
Yeah, honestly, this could have been edited down to 40 minutes and contained all the
stuff. It could have been, like, to make Susan George feel comfortable, it could have been a Tales of the Unexpected episode. But in Tales of the Unexpected, they would have made the soup and poured it on wife's grave. That would have made it
right.
And that will bring to an end another episode of the SweetFeatheryJesus.com podcast. If you'd like to discuss anything you've heard here or anything else for that matter, you're always welcome at our message board at SweetFeatheryJesus.com. Come right over into the forums. You can even log in with your Facebook account and talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to follow us on Facebook, just look us up there. It's Facebook.com/SweetFeatheryJesus. And we're also on Twitter. We'd love to have you follow us on Twitter at sfj.com. That's at sfjdotcom. Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to subscribe via iTunes, and we'll talk to you next time.
Miss Blaine.